And welcome to another episode of Nights at the Round Table. Tis your boy, Man Weezy. And I am joined by a friend all the way across the sea, Catherine in the UK. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad.
I love it.
Thank you for having me today.
Thanks for dealing with the coordination. Because I know it's like, what, you're 6 or 7 hours ahead of us.
Yeah, 6 or 7. Yeah,
and so it's very complicated to do this. So it's 3 where I'm at in Nashville and about almost 8 over there. So
8 o'clock in the evening.
I appreciate you. We do this, Lies the Church Sold Us. We've done series on this and it's been one of our most popular. And I think when I was naming it, we were kind of like, oh, this feels like a really like negative name. But at the same time, it's like, no, but this is really what it is. So when we talk lies, if this is the first time you guys ever heard of this series that we do, we basically try to address or define and separate theology versus ideology. And what that means is there's times where churches may use ideology to reinforce theology. So for my church, we weren't allowed to dance. So if you were going to get married at our church and you were going to have dancing, you weren't allowed to get married at our church. Now, is dancing a sin? No. But for whatever reason, our pastor wanted to promote no dancing. Now, I think subconsciously that made it seem like what the belief was, that dancing was a sin. I don't think he was trying to do that, but subconsciously it's like, I don't know how else to take this, because I had a lot of friends, they were like, dang, I want to get married at our church, but we can't dance and we're Latin. So it's like, we can't, we can't do that. We have to be able to, you know, dance. And real quick, what up, Deborah? What up, Laura? Thank you for joining us. So, you know, I quickly realized, okay, this is something that's more, for whatever reason, pastor wants to, you know, not have dancing, but that just means I'm going to get married somewhere else. That to some would look at us and be like, oh, dancing, that's bad. But no, it's not a sin. It's just an ideology. So we have gone down in our own life, breaking down these type of things, and not to speak against a church, but more so to establish what we're doing inside of our own selves and how we want to live. So when you heard the question, or when we asked, what was the one belief that came into your mind that was ideology instead of theology?
Yeah, so my ideology was, you've got to be good, tithe, and then riches will flow. So I was told this lie that I'd do as I told, be a good girl, follow all the rules, tithe everything you can, and everything will work out, and all this money will have all this money, and life will be easy, and you'll never want for anything. And that is just so not what life has been about.
Really? What point in your life did it dawn on you that this wasn't like what they said it was?
So it's been a kind of like a good 10-15 years in the making, in a sense. So and in particular, we actually got to a point where my husband got asked to leave a church, and at that point we just stopped going to church. I went to a local Church of England kind of early morning prayer service, but no other church. And it's like I suddenly stopped and went, wait a minute, none of what they told me has actually happened. None of the things that I've been told I should do, everything I've tried to do, everything that they've told me to do, be the perfect wife, be the perfect mother, be the perfect, be good in every single way. And by that I mean, you know, turn up with the cakes at the house group, and turn up on a Sunday and smile and teach the kids because that's what you're supposed to do, and turn up and support your husband in whatever they're doing, and your house is always supposed to be perfect, and give your time, if you can't give your money, give your time, which would be an interesting one. And after all of that, you should have a house, you will have a wonderful life, nothing ever will go wrong. And it really hasn't, you know. We don't own our own house. I have a lot of debt, you know, and all these things that just kind of have happened over my life. I sit there and go, but I did all of that.
Yeah.
And I'm still in this place now.
Yeah.
So what is it that you kind of realize, actually, I was manipulated into being a perfect person on the outside, and yet inside I was a complete wreck. And actually I suffered from, I nearly had a breakdown and was really depressed for a while, because I couldn't express who I really was, because I had become this almost like perfect. I did my Bible reading, I did this, I did that, in that thing of I ticked the boxes and it will all be okay.
Yeah.
And surprise, it wasn't.
And it wasn't. You know what's interesting? Like I hear you saying these things, and I automatically, and I don't know if this is a trigger. I don't like those words, because somehow when you use the word trigger, it implies that the other person is doing something to you. And I believe Triggers are internal, like...
Triggers are things, something that's happened inside that makes something go wrong, and your physiology goes, ugh!
And you're allowing yourself to get mad. The other person isn't making you mad. You're allowed. But I automatically hear Christian responses to you. I hear, oh, you're in debt, right? And the first question is, well, what did you do?
Exactly.
You know, what... Yeah. What did you do wrong? Where did you not steward well? You know?
Yeah.
But I do understand what you're saying, because churches will preach tithe. Like if you need to pay this, tithe and watch, God will open the windows of heaven over your life.
And that's exactly what happened. So we got married my last year of uni, and then we started, I started working, and I'm like, I have to tithe. And I even had the whole conversation, do I tithe what I earn before I take tax off or after I tax off?
Right.
There's a whole thing. And I wasn't earning enough to pay the bills.
Yeah.
I didn't have enough to be able to eat, and yet I felt I should. So I started tithing, but then we still needed to eat, or something went wrong. And so you end up going, well, what do I do now? So you go into a little bit of debt, because actually that's the only way you can focus on trying to sort that problem out, because you need to get transport to get to work or whatever it is you need to do. And then you kind of get, so I got to the point, I think that was about two years ago, and this is crazy. This is not good stewardship.
Yeah.
And every time someone was saying, but you should be tithing because this, you know, and I give a story of this lady who gave her last dime, and then she was suddenly blessed with this money and all these riches and a house, and you know, and this, and you'd be told about these people who got given properties and you know, all their bills paid and something else happening, and think, oh, I'm not doing it right, then I've got to keep going, I've got to keep doing it, even though in your head, as I said, I'm an accountant, so in my head's going, this isn't adding up, this is not working out.
Yeah.
I stopped tithing money when I realized that this was going wrong, and I got told by someone, okay, so tithe the time. And so then I ended up spending all of my time either at work or doing stuff for the church, because I had to tithe my time. So I ended up in a situation where, you know, I would, as an accountant, I'd be asked to do the books, so I'd get paid, but I'd have half the rate I normally do because it's part of my tithe. And I wouldn't charge all of my hours that I'd work because it's part of my tithe. And so you end up in a cycle where you don't get paid what you earn worth. You end up exhausted. My house was always and still is always a mess, because when you're working full time and got young kids, and they're bigger now, but and you're doing all this stuff for the church, when do you have time for your house?
Yeah. Yeah.
You just don't. You literally, have they got clean clothes on? Are they happy? Have I paid the bills this week? And then I spent about 4 or 5 years when the boys were young, and I was working 7 days a week.
Yeah. Wow.
And just to try and make sure the bills were paid and everything was covered, and that the roof stood over the head. We had food on the table. I was doing the work for the church, but at a reduced rate. You know, all of those things, because that's what I was told I should be doing to get the riches.
Yeah, yeah. That's so crazy. Deborah says, yep, rent and food starts to add up, and you're giving in the hope that it will suddenly start earning enough to just pay the basics.
Pay the basics.
And
exactly it.
I think that's interesting, because I used to think the same thing. Like, I used to think there was a fear. When I first was introduced to tithing, I was told, like most churches preach, that, you know, tithe and see the windows of heaven open over your life. And if you don't tithe, then watch that window close.
Yeah.
And so it created a fear in my heart with money. Like, I was so scared about the money. I was like, man, Jesus, what if I miss a tithe? Like, are you gonna now, you know, take away my job or whatever? And I was so scared. I was so scared of not tithing that I would just give blindly. And then I remember when I had my road pastor out with me, and he's like, bro, I need you to check these certain things, because I see that you be living in fear, and I need you to check this scripture, check this scripture, check this scripture. And then I started doing a deep dive on tithe, and I started realizing, oh, tithing, you know, not only was it an Old Testament principle, but it had strict rules.
Yeah.
Like, there were three types of tithes, two that happened yearly and one that happened every 7 years. And then we took it a step further. He's like, when they said, you know, bring your grain and your into the storehouse, like, it literally was for food. You were supposed to bring your grain to Jerusalem, to the temple, so that the priests can eat and so that they can feed the poor. And so then I thought more, even on a logical basis. Okay, so if I'm supposed to tithe animals and grain and all these things, I asked one simple question. Well, in those days, who owned grain and animals? Like, rich people did.
Rich people. I was going to say the wealthy, like they do now.
The poor people can't tithe. They don't own grain and they don't own animals. You know, they don't own anything. So it's like, you can't tithe your master's grain. Like, that's not yours.
Yeah.
And so I was like, the only time when I read about it, the only time it was ever converted into money was when you had too much grain and not enough animals to carry the grain to, you know, on your pilgrimage to give it. And so it had to be converted to money. But then when you got there, you were supposed to then buy the grain, buy the animal back, and then give that. Yeah. And so when I learned that, that took one layer off. And then the second layer was that I looked around and I saw there's still a lot of poor people here tithing. Like, why is there way more poor people in church than rich? There's a lot more poor. But they're all tithing. And I started thinking, well, man, maybe this isn't like a 2 + 2 = 4. And then I really dug in and I was like, oh, now I understand, Jesus. The whole point of this is so that money doesn't grab a hold of you. It's not the money. It's whether or not you choose money over everybody else. It's whether or not you trust money more than you trust God.
And that's the thing, because, you know, especially the whole conversation I had in my head about, do I tithe 10% of the gross or 10% of the net? It was that legalistic trying to tick the box that said I was doing what I should, and that's another thing on my list that I should do, as you say, and rather than actually understanding what it's supposed to be for and actually looking around and looking for those that actually need help around you and giving to them in that way. So, yeah, totally different now. I give to a couple of charities on a regular basis. And then if I know there are people that are in need, I will try and fulfill that need rather than give to the church to do it on my behalf. Actually, I do it myself now.
No, I've delegated my money. I still put away a certain amount. And now I just ask God, show me, like, show me where to give, because now I don't think anymore that, oh, if I don't give to a church, that means I'm bad or I don't love God. Now it's like, okay, God, show me, like, in real time, who is around me that may need, and it may be different people, maybe a family member, it may be a stranger, it may be whatever, but I have an account, and we call it the giving account, and it's just has a bunch of money in it. And I just look around and I'm like, all right, God, you'll show me. I don't feel bad. I don't feel whatever. I'm just like, okay, I have resources ready to bless anyone that you just show me when it comes time. Because now what I've done is I've taken tithe from a bill to now a human experience. Now I'm doing it myself. Because when I give $10,000 to the church, I don't know what they're going to do. And I don't know if I want to give you $10,000 to buy speakers. Or to buy
also, more. to pay the pastor who then spends it on something that a new car, and you think, well, did you actually need them the new car? And I think, but then I should be making that judgment. So therefore, why am I giving that money?
Well, it's right to
Because then
pay the
I'm
pastor.
judging you.
No, it's
So.
okay to pay technically, the original intent was to pay the priest, you know,
It
the
was,
Levitical
yes.
priesthood.
So they
So
always had
you
food
should pay
and
the pastor, 100%.
yeah.
What the pastor does with that money, it doesn't bother me. You can have a new car, you can have a nice house, you can have whatever you want. I do not care. Because again, I'm not responsible for what he does with the money. I'm only
Yeah.
responsible to be generous and take care of whoever it is that's, you know, providing the word. So it's different now when I'm not in the church, because now everyone can be a beneficiary of whatever money I'm ready to give, you know. And
Yeah.
it's a different experience, and I found that it made me closer to God, because now I'm not writing a bill. Now
Yeah.
I'm actively asking him, who needs it? Where
And
is it
it's
going to
that
go?
feeling, isn't it? You get that kind of like I call it my gut feeling, because it literally starts in my gut and it kind of bubbles up, and I'm going, I've got to do something about this.
Yeah.
And that's my kind of okay, and I'll, you know, pay the bill or send the money or do whatever it is, because you're learning to see what it is that God's wanting to see, rather than, as you say, the legalistic tick the list because it makes you look good,
Correct.
makes fits the box, because that's what you've got to do to get the riches.
And to be honest, it
So
breaks fear.
it does,
'Cause there's a fear.
yeah.
I remember when I first got married, I had a poor person mentality. Because I've always been poor. So my mentality was always lack. I'm always going to be in
Yeah.
lack. I'm never going to have enough. And so I was a traveling Christian musician, making pennies, you know, out there on the road, doing it for the Lord. But I was really good with saving, and I was really good with money.
Yeah.
So by the time I get married, I have six figures in my bank account, and I'm like, all right. Mind you, I've never made more than $60,000 a year, ever. I was just, most of the years was 20, 30, 35. You know, I peaked at 60 one year and then went right back down to 35. So it wasn't like a lucrative career, but I just lived like a pauper. Like, I didn't have a
Yeah.
house. I had a suitcase. I had a car, and that was it.
That's
And
nothing
so I
else.
saved everything. And then when I got married, I was so scared of being poor that I remember when I sold my car and bought this BMW. It's the first time I ever upgraded my life. I bought this BMW cash, right? It was a 6 Series,
Nice.
really nice.
Yeah.
And the amount of times I looked down at the gas tank because I thought I was not going to have enough money to pay for the gas.
Yeah.
Like, it crippled me. I was looking down every 5 seconds just because I was like, oh my God, oh my. It didn't dawn that you just paid cash for this car and now you're worried about gas. Like, you really think that you can't afford the gas? But I was so riddled with fear over money. And that's when I realized what God is really trying to do in giving, in all of that, is to take away the fear that you're gonna be in lack. If you
Yeah,
can
I think
move like that, it opens up power.
that's so true. I mean, we grew up, so my dad was an evangelist when I was very young. So we literally grew up with nothing. We had secondhand clothes. Mum had to make do with what she ever had. So, you know, holidays were days out. We never went anywhere. Or if we did go somewhere, we went to stay on camps that dad was leading with youth. And he played the guitar, and you know, he did everything for God, which was amazing. But actually, that meant that we had very little, or very not much at all. So absolutely, you do grow up with that fear. And then when you go to university, and there was literally, I was living on £6 a week for my food, which
Wow.
is, you know, going back 20 years ago. I actually met my husband at that time, and he'd come with me, and he'd like buy my shopping, because I'd be like, okay, that's 3 cans of beans, 2 things, that's enough. I've just got enough to make it through the week. And so yeah, so it's always been that kind of, you're trying to break that cycle all the time of that fear. And because we rent, we have had a situation where we previous place where we rented, our landlord said, right, we want you out. We had 8 weeks to move. That creates that constant fear of, if I don't pay the rent, I'm out.
Right.
And we were actually technically homeless after that because we couldn't find anywhere within the 8 weeks. We had two young boys, a dog, my husband and myself. So, you know, it wasn't a lot, but a lot of rented places don't take dogs. Private rented, we didn't have any schemes over here to rent. We were way down any kind of like social housing list. And we ended up in a property that the cathedral owns locally for 6 months. It was a pretty poor condition, but I was so grateful to have that roof over our head for 6 months. And then that fear as you come to the end of 6 months, they couldn't extend the contract any further than 6 months. And we still didn't have anywhere. And I think it was within a week of our contract finishing at the other place that we got where we are now. And we've been here like 8 years. But there's still that element of, if I don't have the right amount of money, if I don't. And I'm earning now more than I have ever earned in my entire career. I'm almost 50 and I'm earning a really good salary. But that fear still sits in there because of that worry that actually what happens if I can be ill for 1 week and then we're homeless.
See, so, and that's that right there. That's where God's trying to get to.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with money or anything. It's the fear. Look, and this is something that I realized for myself. Once you start making decisions based out of that fear, then God is no longer God. Fear is your God.
Yeah.
And that's a very real hard fact because now you don't make decisions based in faith or what God says, you know, I will take care of you. But the decisions are now based on, I'm afraid. Mm. When you sow that or when you act in that, then that's the only thing that can be reproduced in your life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's really hard as well when I'm a numbers person.
Yeah, yeah.
Numbers is my thing. So I live in numbers.
Yeah.
And I live in cash flows and I live in looking forward and seeing what's coming.
Yep.
And yeah, it's not easy. So yeah.
I think as much as it's almost harder for you because you have to, when the Bible talks about faith like a child, the beautiful thing about it is that a child doesn't try to figure things out. You tell the child, this is good, this is bad. And they think, okay, this is good, this is bad, cool. They don't reason, they just trust. So in the same way for you, freedom will come when you literally just become a child when it comes to the numbers. Just understand that, yo, I get it. I get exactly what could happen, but I need to do something drastic to increase my faith. You want to know what I did? I hit up my business managers because before I was like, again, at this point, me and Andrew are doing well. So there's no reason for us. We're living way below our means. We don't need to be scared, but I was still scared. So what I did, and this is drastic, before I was always checking my accounts like maybe every other day. Just to see, I don't know what I expected, but every other day
I do a weekly budget.
I'm checking my account. Yeah, I'm like, okay, let me make sure that there's still money in there. I told my business managers, I was like, hey, and they got used to me being this way. I told them, you know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to contact you guys for a year. Call me if we start going broke. And that's what I told them. I was like, other than that, don't send me anything that has to do with money. Angel, look into it. I don't want to see it. Now, granted, most people would be like, bruh, you're going to get robbed, these business managers. But I was like, no, Angel, look at it because she don't have this problem. My wife has like Uber faith. And for a whole year, I didn't look at my accounts. And at the end of that year, when I looked back, we had way more money than we did when we started the year. And I was like, well, look at that. No worrying, no whatever. I was just living like, I don't want to say reckless, but I was living like carefree. Like, I'm just going to buy that. I'm going to buy that. Now, I wasn't stupid. I wasn't going around buying Aston Martins, but I was, you know, I was enjoying my life. And when I came back and looked and we had more money, I lost the fear. I was like, oh, God really is taking care of us. Like, he really is. I don't have to be scared about this. And I haven't had it since. It tries to creep up when life changes direction. So now that we're about to have my first baby, I immediately start thinking, oh my God, what if we can't afford? What if we can't afford? You know, like, but yeah. People do it every day with less than us.
Do it every day, yeah.
So it's like fear has no place in here, and I'm just going to keep walking forward. So I think it's beautiful that if you can see your story and the fact that you are still where you're at, that obviously means that the one consistent thing is that God has been faithful. There have been tough times.
He has been faithful. Absolutely has been faithful.
And the tough times really only make the high times and the good times that much sweeter. I don't think you can appreciate the sweetness of like good times until you've had like really dark times.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think you are completely, when you've been as low as you have, or I have been, you really appreciate the highs more. And you have to accept that if you're going to have the highs, you're going to have the lows. It's part of life. And therefore, embracing that is actually quite hard at times, because you've got to allow yourself to feel the feelings. And sometimes that's the biggest part, is being able to feel the feelings and allow yourself. And one of the things I've been really doing over the past 5 or 6 years is finding out who I am, not who people said I should be, or how I should behave, or how I should react, or ticking the list of all the things and putting the smile on the face and going, yes, I've got everything together. But actually being honest and going, I have nothing together, thanks. My life is as it is, but I just keep going. And, you know, God has been faithful in all of that, that, you know, a roof has stayed over our heads. I constantly do get work. The boys are on the whole healthy, you know, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah. I think the greatest disservice you can do to yourself is to tell yourself that you have to have it all together. It's such a prideful and egotistical thing to think that, or even get mad at yourself that you don't. I used to do it to myself all the time, and my wife would always be like, why you get so mad at yourself? And when I break it down, it's my ego. Like, I get mad at myself for not being able to see the future or not being able to, like, you know, tell that somebody's lying to me. I only can see it hindsight. And she's like, did you, like, and when I really get down to it, it's like, bro, you're mad that you're not God. You're mad that you don't have all the answers. And that's like pride. That's all that is pride. So now I've like pushed away this idea of needing to know, needing to be right, needing to have all the answers. I'm like, I don't need any of that.
Yeah. And if you don't like me as I am, then you're not right to be in my life, because at the end of the day, this is who I was made to be. I'm not perfect. I don't have the cleanest house in the world. I won't be making cakes every 5 minutes for the local come and buy sale.
Yeah.
But actually what I do have is me, and I actually quite like me. Got to know me a little bit, and I actually quite like myself, which is quite amazing.
I've only talked to you for 30 minutes and I like you. I want to try one of your pies, but only if you have time to cook me a pie. And at the same time, we could talk numbers and figure out what I need to do to save.
Sounds good to me.
Oh my God, I'm so grateful that you took time to speak with us, man. I really am. Thanks for making the time. I appreciate you. We're available to you, you know, the Knights fam. Like, we always check our messages, and so if you ever want to just send out a lifeline, or if you need some encouragement or anything, just holler. I answer my personal page all the time, and we answer the Knights page. So holler at any point. And when I get to England, I'm gonna hit you up.
Absolutely. I work in London 2 days a week now, so I'm in London.
Oh, perfect.
On a regular basis. So when you got next open London, let me know.
I will.
And I'll make sure I'm around.
I love it. All right, Catherine. Go to sleep over there. I know it's late.
Will do.
Appreciate you.
Thanks, Manuel. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much, y'all, for listening to part one of this episode. We appreciate it greatly. Hey, like and subscribe if you guys are feeling this. Share it with your friends. We appreciate it so much. Please come back next week for part two. Love you.